Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Pasell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful week so far. A lot of stuff that I want to talk about on the podcast today. I'm going to be getting into some big summer trending trailers that are coming out this late in the summer movie season. I'm also going to be getting into some news regarding to a sequel to the classic 88 film Beetlejuice. I'm also going to be talking about some Transformers Rise of the Beast information, some early reactions coming out for The Little Mermaid, and much more. But the first thing that I do want to talk about on the podcast today, since this is the first one of the week and I haven't talked about the weekend box office, is of course recapping what went on during this weekend for the box office. And of course, this past weekend officially marked the beginning of the 2023 summer movie season, which featured Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, written and directed by James Gunn once again, and probably for the final time as he's moving over to DC. Of course, it was starring once again Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, voices of both Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper as Groot and Rocket. You also had a plethora of new characters coming in as well, Will Poulter as Adam Warlock, and a whole lot more. So usually, again, the MCU is the one that kind of kicks off the summer movie season. It really has since 2008 when Iron Man first came out in that May slot. And so ever since then, Marvel has just dominated the beginning of May and really kind of kicked off the blockbuster season for the months of May through August, basically. So it seems right that once again, as we're kind of officially getting back into the swing of things with the summer season coming off of the pandemic, really. And 2023 is really the first big wave of, I think, blockbusters that is kind of coming through, where it's consistency through each of the summer months. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how all these films do at the box office. And of course, with Guardians right now, I think it's even more important, since with Marvel right now, these movies for the MCU are kind of on shaky ground a little bit. They're not as steady as they used to be. Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania didn't do all that well. It barely was able to almost get to $500 million, which for the third Ant-Man film after the first two did very, very well, is not a really good sign for that film. And so I think a lot of people are wondering, moving forward with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is it more of the MCU fatigue? Is it the quality of the films that audiences are kind of getting tired about? Is it the connected nature of the universe that they're not seeing yet? And I think with Guardians, a lot of people had an idea that this would kind of be a little bit of a stabilizer because of the goodwill already put forth with the first two Guardians films and their interactions within the MCU and films like Infinity War, Endgame, Love and Thunder. So there was a big question moving forward with Guardians of how much would it be able to open to, and would it kind of bring back the big box office openings that we see Marvel doing, where sometimes they'll have initial projections for the film, but usually they'll exceed those projections and really overperform in the opening weekend of the box office. And so for Guardians of the Galaxy, it was coming in at around $110, $120 million in the initial projections. And in the end, when we also accumulate the exact estimates of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 from kind of the opening night of Thursday to Sunday, overall, Volume 3 did accumulate $118 million at the box office for its opening weekend. It also made internationally $191 million, for now a worldwide total of $318 million at the box office. So it's already exceeded $300 million leading up to right now on Wednesday as well. So overall, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is doing modestly well. It's not, I think, doing insane numbers, but I think the big question moving forth with Guardians is, what is the second weekend going to look like for this movie? And when you look at some of the other records, or really some of the other numbers in the past, when you look at last year's summer movie season, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness did $187 million opening weekend. The second Guardians film did $146 million in 2017. It's the second biggest debut of the year behind the Super Mario Brothers film. So again, it was a really good weekend for Marvel opening. But for me, what I always look into and take into account is, what does the second weekend numbers look like? What is the drop off for these films? And in recent memory right now with these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, the dip has kind of been between 65-70% from opening weekend to the second weekend. And usually you do not want those kind of numbers. Now, sometimes if you come in at around 60% of a drop off, if a film opens up at around 100%, $160, $150 million, even though the drop-off is steep, the numbers are still good because you're still coming in at around maybe $90, $80 million, basically. But for these kinds of films, when you even look at Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, really good first weekend, $106 million, a record opening for the Ant-Man franchise. But when you look at the legs moving forward in subsequent weeks, the drop-off were really, really insurmountable. And basically, the film's performance kind of fell like a house of cards, basically. And so the question moving forward with Guardians, I think it's bigger now than it was even with Ant-Man because of the feel that is coming up for the summer movie season, is how is Guardians going to be able to recuperate more money moving forward? So this upcoming weekend, there's some really, not big films, but a lot of genre films kind of coming out for different demographics, but nothing that I think is going to really compete with Guardians. So really, it should win its second weekend easily. But then weekend three, weekend four, weekend five, it's got a lot of competition. And 2 weeks from now, you have Fast 10. A week after, you have The Little Mermaid for Memorial Day weekend. That's expected to be big. And then the weekend after, you have Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse coming out. So it's going to be very interesting to see with these demographics if they're going to be able to hold and keep interest and get that kind of repeat viewing over the next couple of weeks. Are fans and some general audience members, did they really enjoy the film enough that they want to go back multiple times to see it? Or did fans kind of get their Guardians of the Galaxy fix over the weekend, whether it's seeing it once, twice, three times or more? So that's kind of the question moving forward with this movie is, great opening weekend, but for an MCU film now, what do the next couple weekends look like, especially in the summer movie season with the competition that it is going up against? It's not like last year with Doctor Strange where you had a few weeks in between, and then at the end of May you had a film like Top Gun Maverick come out, and then that was the one that kind of took the torch as the number one film and exploded. But Doctor Strange basically had the whole month of May leading up to Top Gun Maverick. And then Top Gun Maverick took the baton and had well over a couple weeks before something like an Elvis came out or a Jurassic World Dominion came out. So this summer, really, it's one film after another going to be cannibalizing themselves with these four quadrant movies. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is kind of that test right now to see what that is going to look like. Again, weekend two, it's going to be very interesting to see because there's not a lot of competition. But if it does drop off exponentially this upcoming weekend, then that's not going to spell really good business for this movie, again, considering the competition that is going to be coming out and the fact that they're going to be having to give up a lot of these premium level format theaters, IMAX, Dolby, 3D. So you're not going to have that chunk of change in that price increase that you would normally have, whereas something like Super Mario Brothers had that for a full month, and which is why it was able to do the kind of success that it was able to do, because it had those premium level format screenings for the most part for the entirety of the month of April. Guardians is not going to be able to have that. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what these next couple of weekends look like for Guardians of the Galaxy. But again, for an opening weekend, very good numbers throughout the week so far. It's been holding up pretty well, but the weekend numbers for weekend two are going to be a very, very key test for this movie moving forward. And then coming in at number two this weekend was the film that was reigning for the last four weekends in a row, and that of course was the Super Mario Brothers movie, which comes in at number two and grossed an additional $18.5 million at the box office. It now has $518 million domestically, $644 million internationally, for a 1.1 worldwide accumulation total at the box office. And just when we think that Super Mario Brothers is done breaking box office records, climbing box office historical charts, it's not done just yet. And it's joining some really elite company, especially on the animated side. So as of right now, Super Mario Brothers ranks number three all time domestically at the box office. The only two films that come in above it is at number two, 2019's The Lion King, and then 2018's The Incredibles 2, which has over $600 million at the box office. In terms of the all time animated list worldwide, it comes in just ahead of Minions, Incredibles 2, Frozen, Frozen 2, and still the top dog on the worldwide chart is the 2019 film The Lion King, which of course was the kind of quote-unquote live-action remake of that animated classic, and it grossed $1.6 billion at the box office. And I don't know if it's going to be able to get into that range just yet. I mean, it's still doing very, very well for itself, but it did have the biggest dip in between weekend to weekend, where usually it's been dipping between 30 to 40%, which is incredible legs, but then you're seeing the effect of when you have another big blockbuster four quadrant film that goes up against it, like Guardians did this past weekend. It took away some of the premium or all of the premium level format theaters. And again, like I was saying with Guardians, it's going to be key. You could very well see here that not having those screenings for Mario helped in the more steeper decline this weekend for the film. Either way, though, it doesn't really matter because this film is still raking in a boatload of money. That is still the highest grossing film within a mile for 2023 so far worldwide and even domestically as well. So this film is still doing very, very well for itself. And kind of like Guardians, I am very curious to see how this film performs in the next couple of weeks. And while I don't think it's going to have the competition coming up, maybe Little Mermaid is going to be competition for Super Mario Brothers because it deals with the family demographic, but something like Fast 10, not really worried about that because it's not really, I think, inflicting within that kind of demographic. Little Mermaid, again, is going to be more of a test to see if it's a steeper decline, but either way, though, I think this film is doing incredibly well for itself, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see if it can continue to creep up these lists moving forward and even climb up the worldwide overall chart within the box office rankings as well. And then coming in below that, though, at number three is the Warner Brothers horror film Evil Dead Rise, which grossed an additional $5.8 million at the box office and now has made $54 million domestically, internationally $61 million worldwide, and internationally it's made $61 million worldwide. It has made $115 million at the box office. And once again, horror just continues to dominate overall within the movie landscape, where a film that was originally supposed to go to streaming, Warner Brothers Discovery made the pivot to put this in theaters, and so far it has turned an incredible profit for the company right now. As again, for a film that probably had a budget between $20, maybe $40 million at most before marketing came into effect, those kinds of numbers are what makes something like $115 million overall at the box office a huge win for a horror film like this. Because of the low risk that you're making in investing in the film, you reap the big benefits and the awards for that. And I think horror, there's a reason why horror is succeeding right now. It's because of the fans that want to go see it. You have the traditional horror fans, but people that might be fans of the Evil Dead franchise, or even going back to a few months when Scream came out, that did very well for itself. But when you also look at the money being invested into it, it's in the fact that they're not inflating these budgets for these horror films. They're making them on reasonable budgets, reasonable money, and because of that, you're seeing a big turnaround and a big profit for these horror films for these studios right now. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how horror does in the summer movie season when we have films like The Boogeyman, The Blackening, which is kind of a satirical comedy horror film, but still within that kind of genre. I'm very curious to see how these films do moving forward in a year or summer, really, where you have a lot of these big IP blockbusters moving forward. So very curious about that, but overall, a really successful weekend and run so far for Evil Dead Rise. And then coming in at number four is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which grossed an additional $3.2 million at the box office and now has $12 million overall, both domestically and worldwide at the box office. Then coming in at number five was the counter-programming to Guardians of the Galaxy this weekend, which was the other big overall release with Priyanka Chopra Jonas, is Love Again, the rom-com, which also featured the debut performance of Celine Dion as an actor. That, unfortunately, didn't really, I think, grasp a lot of people to go into the theaters to see this kind of film. It only grossed $2.3 million at the box office, only $92,000 internationally for a worldwide total of $2.7 million at the box office. And even though this film had a $9 million budget before marketing even comes into play, still, these aren't the kind of money, the numbers that Sony and Screen Gems, which both produced and distributed this movie, came in with, I think, expecting for this kind of film. And I think it just kind of showcases that it's still kind of finicky to kind of feel what counter-programming still works, whether it's romantic comedies, whether it's dramas, indie films. It's still a kind of a hit and miss to see which ones really stick with a lot of people. And I think a film like this, I think, could have been interesting counter-programming. programming, but I think you're just not, it's not the kind of genre that is really speaking of succeeding right now at the box office. And I think certain films like this that might do well, like A Ticket to Paradise last year, has big stars. And all due respect to somebody like a Priyanka Chopra Jonas, she's not on the level of somebody like a George Clooney or a Julia Roberts. And Celine Dion is no more known more as a musician. And I felt like they didn't really lean into the marketing of the Celine Dion part of it as much as they could have. Maybe that could have maybe attracted more people. But this, even when I seen the trailer, looking at this film going up against Guardians, it wasn't going to be able to have any kind of, I think, a huge boost. And I think maybe if this film came out around Valentine's Day, maybe later in the summer, it might have done a little better. But to kind of open up the summer season as well, I don't think that was a good spot for it. And I think, unfortunately, it is hurting with the numbers that is coming in on right now. Then to go to the bottom half of the top 10, coming in at number six is John Wick Chapter 4, which grossed an additional $2.3 million at the box office and now has made $180 million domestically, $226 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $406 million at the box office. Coming in at number seven is Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which grossed an additional $1.4 million at the box office and now has $90 million domestically, $111 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $202 million. And then rounding out the last three spots on the top 10, coming in at number eight was Air, which grossed an additional $1.3 million. And number nine, staying at that spot, was Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, which grossed an additional $1.2 million. And then rounding out the top 10, staying in the 10th spot from last weekend, was the action film Sisu, which grossed an additional $1.1 million at the box office. So to go from 10 to 1 again at the box office, number 10 was Sisu, number 9 was Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, number 8 was Air, number 7 was Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves, number 6 was John Wick Chapter 4, number 5 was Love Again, number 4 was Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, and number 3 was Evil Dead Rise. And then bumping off from the number 1 spot to the number 2 spot was a Super Mario Brothers film, and then coming in reigning the new number one champion to kick off the summer movie season, of course, is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So overall, guys, throughout this top 10, what did you think about the list? Are there films that you like on this list that you don't like on this list? What have you seen? What have you not seen? Let me know down below and leave your thoughts. And then to move on to some other movie news that is going on around the world of Hollywood. Of course, the one that I really want to kind of talk about right now, just for a little bit, since it's kind of been going on, I didn't really address it last week when it kicked off, of course, is the WGA strike. The Writers Guild strike began last week. And of course, this is the first big strike to happen since that 07-08 writer's strike occurred. And basically, for a lot of people that might not have been following it, basically the Writers Guild and the Academy Motion Pictures, the producers, the studios, kind of were trying to come together to create a deal. It didn't really work out, and so now the writers are striking on Hollywood, both in LA and New York and other various locations that productions are happening on. So again, I'm not really going to get into a lot of the details since it's really kind of been covered from beginning to end. But again, I'm somebody who supports the writers in this situation. It's a shame that Hollywood is shut down, but the writers, what they're asking for isn't really a whole lot when it comes to more of an expansive writer's room, when it comes to better payment for staff when it comes from studios. So they're asking for kind of the bare minimums of what they want, but I'm hoping that a deal can come to an arrangement sooner rather than later, so everything can kind of get back up and running. Even though some productions are going on right now, it's going to be very interesting to see how some of these showrunners, especially on television, are able to work. I know showrunners like the guys from Lord of the Rings are not working there right now, even though there's only a few days left of shooting. I know for a fact now that it's been reported that Tony Gilroy, who is the showrunner for Andor, is no longer doing showrunner type things. Because of the writer's strike going on right now, they're basically writers, basically. They run the show, they create and help the scripts, the dialogue, all that kind of stuff with the writers in the room. So it's really kind of coming from their mind. So they're the ones that are, I think, also going to be striking as well. So seeing a lot of these shows kind of come out is going to be very interesting. For movies, I don't think it's as big because of the fact that I think for the next year or so, films that are already in production right now are well into the mode right now that they don't need to really kind kind of have a lot of rewrites. But for films that are not going out right now, whether it's Blade, which has been affected by the writer's strike, Deadpool 3, I think, is going to be affected by the writer's strike, given the fact that they kind of write their scripts on the fly, given the kind of jokes and ad-lib that goes on, that might not be possible. So that film might be affected by the writer's strike as they're about to go into production as well. Then you have some of these other shows that are going in, sitcom shows right now, shows like Abbott Elementary that were supposed to start. There's a writer's room last week, but because of the strike, shut everything down. It's really TV shows that I think are going to be taking the brunt of this right now. But hopefully a deal gets done, but it's a deal hopefully that is worthy for the writers right now, and they're able to get a deal that lives up to their expectations, and there can be some middle ground that's able to be worked out in the next couple of months. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it all kind of shakes down from there. So what do you guys think about the writer's strike that is happening right now? I just wanted to kind of touch upon it before we're kind of going into some other movie news, since I haven't talked about it yet. But I stand for the writers. I hope the writers get a fair deal and this is resolved hopefully before the summer is over. Now to move on to some trending trailers that have come out over the last couple of days. And these are two trailers that I'm going to talk about today are for films that are coming out this summer movie season. The big one that came out over the weekend and it was released fully for the world to see on Monday is the latest trailer, final trailer, question mark, I'm not sure yet, for the brand new Christopher Nolan film, for Oppenheimer, which of course was written and directed by the filmmaking auteur, and it stars an A-list cast that includes Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, Florence Pugh. I could go on and on and on about the cast that is a part of this film, but Oppenheimer is my most anticipated film of 2023. I've been really looking forward to it. I've loved the trailers that have come out for the film so far. And I remember the first time I saw this trailer was actually when I saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 this past weekend. I went to go see it at the AMC Lincoln Square 13 in New York City. And that's arguably the biggest IMAX theater in the country, one of the top theaters in the world. And to see it on that kind of a screen was just mesmerizing. And everything you could want in a Nolan film, it seems like this one has. It looks epic, insanely epic for a biofilm, and it's just absolutely amazing to me that for a film that is telling pretty much a straight, thorough story about really kind of history that went on, Nolan is still able to make it seem as suspenseful as possible. Even though you know exactly what's going to happen in the history behind this, he's still, through dialogue, through action, even just in this trailer, make it seem big and epic in scope and scale with the dialogue that feels like a riveting indie film that this would kind of be a part of if it was directed by really anyone else but Nolan. So this all looks exciting to me. I'm somebody who is a big proponent of World War II. I love kind of learning about the history of that time period, and Oppenheimer is somebody who I know a little bit about the history, but to kind of get a film examining him and his life and how big of a piece he was to the future of, I think, weapons within the military, of the effectiveness of ending World War II, he was a huge proponent of that. And I'm really excited for somebody like a Cillian Murphy, who is a great actor, but never really gets the opportunity to shine as the lead. He is a great supporting performer who anchors films really well alongside leads. I mean, he was a great Scarecrow during the Dark Knight trilogy. When he's a great lead, I think, in Peaky Blinders. If you know the Netflix series that's on the streaming service, go and check that out. He's great in the lead in that. And even in something like in Inception, or even along the lines of a Dunkirk, he has supporting roles in that, but he's one of the highlights. So I'm happy that he's able to really kind of showcase his acting chops in a film like this, where he is front and center in the lead role. Even though it is a great ensemble cast, he is really much the name. His name is in the title, really, with the character that he plays in Oppenheimer. So I'm really happy and excited to see his role in this film. This just looks incredible. I'm going to see it on the biggest screen that I possibly can. And I could see this very well much being a big-time Oscar contender. I think when you look back on Nolan's work, specifically back in 2017 when he did Dunkirk, war films speak very much to the Academy. And I think when you mix in a biopic with a war film in the way that this kind of is, technically, I think that could spell very, very effective sus, especially if it lives to what we know Christopher Nolan to do with these kinds of films. And I know people weren't big fans of Tenet, and I think it's grown on me as time has gone on. It's still one of my favorite Nolan films in the last couple of years. I think it's a really, really underappreciated movie. But I do think that after the scale of that film, I think he needed to kind of dial it back a little bit. And I think Oppenheimer is the right film to do that with. But it still has all those Nolan-isms that you love from him when you're going to see a theatrical experience from this director. So I'm really excited about it. The trailers have been amazing so far. And this latest one is no exception. It is still amazing. And I cannot wait to see what Nolan has cooked up with Oppenheimer. And then the last trailer that kind of came out this past week that I want to talk about is for a late summer film that did really well a couple of years ago in 2018. It is the sequel to The Meg, which is titled The Meg 2, The Trench. And this once again sees Jason Statham reprising his role in this movie, where basically he's taking on a bunch of angry, hungry sharks, basically, and they're huge sharks. And that's really all you need to know about this movie, basically, and in the previous installment as well. It's Jason Statham versus big sharks. And seeing the trailer for this one, the first one did very well at the box office, so it made sense if they wanted to make a sequel. Why not continue this as a potential franchise, maybe? And for the trailer for this new movie, it looks like the exact same kind of fun that the first one does. And when watching this trailer, I love it when a studio, a director, know the kind of movie that they're making, which is a campy, fun, popcorn, summer blockbuster, basically. And that's exactly what the trailer portrays this one to be. And I have to say, the CGI in this one actually looks pretty good. I actually believe that in the beginning, those were dinosaurs. They didn't look cheap or fake or out of sorts, really. It fit within the environment, so it all seems pretty realistic, even though I know that it is VFX that is doing all the work. And so for me, this just looks like a fun late summer hit, potentially, that could lead this to success for this movie. And when you look at kind of the late summer window, specifically in August, usually there's a film or two that really surprise a bunch of people that are like, oh, this was a fun late summer film. I didn't know this would be as good, or oh, maybe this could have come out earlier in the year. But you always want to find those kind of diamonds in the rough, and you find a lot of those films really in the month of August. And I think this year, other than in recent years, especially during the pandemic, I think August is very much going to have some potential diamonds in the rough with that, whether it's The Meg 2, or you also in that same weekend have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, in which both Meg 2 and Turtles are coming out on August 4th. But then a week later, you have something like a Gran Turismo, which I think is something that could surprise a bunch of people. I really like the trailer, so that's another one that could do well. And then, of course, about a week later or so is the latest from DC after The Flash, which is Blue Beetle. And that's, again, not on the level of The Flash or even an Aquaman, but still, it's another small town time superhero within a big moniker like DC that could maybe surprise a bunch of people, depending on what the budget for this film, that film is. But usually there's a diamond or two that you can find within this month, and I think The Meg is clearly trying to go for that right now. I think coming out right in the beginning of August is a good sign that you have at least faith that you can kind of be one of those last big time summer films that come out before the season wraps up. And so I'm looking for Meg 2 to do that, and it seems like it is focusing on being that kind of fun film, and we'll see how it all kind of plays together when this film does come out on August 4th. What did you guys think about these trailers for both Oppenheimer and for this new Meg film? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts into some other news that is going on in Hollywood right now. In terms of some new announcements coming for projects, there was a big one that was announced yesterday, and it was rumored for a little while. There were some rumored casting announcements that this could really happen. Then officially coming from the trades yesterday, it seems like this film is actually happening, and it is a sequel to the hit classic from 1988, Beetlejuice, which it doesn't have a confirmed title right now, but all people are going by right now is that it is going to at least be called Beetlejuice 2. And it already has a release date, which is set for September 6th of 2024, which is the exact same weekend as Blade is coming out. Although, again, like I was saying with the writer's strike, that film is being affected by that right now, so I wouldn't be shocked if that film moves away from that spot. And I think Warner Brothers probably knew that, and they decided to put that film on the September 6th release date as well. And I think this one could do some business. According to a lot of the trades coming out with this report, it is set to reprise Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. Winona Ryder is going to be coming back. And Tim Burton is going to be getting behind the director's chair once again for this film. And then tagging along for the ride in this one, you have Justin Trudeau, who is right now, it is undisclosed what role he could be taking on the film. But there's another person who's coming on to this film that is a main Tim Burton stay, especially coming off of the hit last year of Wednesday, and that, of course, is Jenna Ortega herself, who will be playing the daughter of Winona Ryder's character from the original film. So Jenna Ortega is reuniting with Tim Burton, Michael Keaton and Winona Ryder are reteaming with Burton for this film as well. So it seems like nothing could go wrong, and I guess they have a script in place for what they want to do. Filming is set to begin this week, specifically today. Actually, production is set to begin, and I think this film kind of comes into question, like a lot of other reboot slash sequels, is do we really need this film right now? Do we need another Beetlejuice movie? And when you look at the box office from the film that came out in 1988, if you discount all the re-releases that have come out, it made over $74 million at the box office. Now, that isn't big, and I even think for 1988, that wasn't insanely a huge success. I think that was a big success, but it wasn't what we think successes are like in today's day and age when it comes to the box office. But it still remained a great classic that people always watch during the Halloween time. So I think it makes sense for Warner Brothers right now that the name of the game right now is kind of mining all this IP that you have. Why not go to Beetlejuice? And if you're getting a lot of the main characters back who play these iconic roles, it makes a lot of sense. And if you have Tim Burton coming back, he likes the script that's coming out. You're pairing up with a really good cast so far with the original two and also newcomers like Ortega and Justin Trudeau. I think this could be a film that maybe does well. Do we need it necessarily? I don't think so. But again, the name of the game is mining IP, and they're doing that with this film right now. So no surprise whatsoever. I'm somebody who's a big fan of Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder. I'm a big fan of what Jenna Ortega is doing right now. So whatever she's got going on, I'm going to be in the theater to see no matter what. And this also will include Beetlejuice 2. So what do you guys think about the news in regards to a brand new Beetlejuice movie? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. Next thing I want to talk about pertains again to this summer movie season, and it's kind of two stories that intertwine with one another, and it was announced over today and yesterday, or really rather Monday, that tickets are now on sale for both Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and Transformers Rise of the Beast. And the reason I wanted to kind of go into this topic is, to me, these are very interesting wild cards going into the summer season in terms of box office, in terms of what the response for these films are going to be like. Now, I think one is more on the positive and one's more on the negative. So I'll go to the negative one first, and that is probably not surprising everyone when I say this, but the negative one in the direction that it's going in is Transformers Rise of the Beast. And even though they have a brand new director who I really, really like, and Stephen Cable Jr., I love what he did in the second Creed film, I just don't have the same enthusiasm in the Transformers franchise. And I'm somebody who stuck through it, through all the Michael Bay films, even as bad as they got, especially with that fourth and fifth one. And with Bumblebee, that film didn't do as well overall. So I'm wondering, is there some kind of fatigue maybe within this franchise in a way? And that it's not the box office behemoth that it was back in the late 2000s, early 2010s, when you had that kind of Shia LaBeouf, Michael Bay trilogy going on during that time period, where it was making over $1 billion at the box office worldwide. And I don't know about this anymore. I don't know if this franchise has a lot of the good faith anymore. And I think because of the fact that it's got a lot of baggage with it in terms of all these different movies, all these different maybe timelines going on. Does it fit within the main universe? Does it not? Is it doing its own thing? Those things are left a little bit unresolved, and I don't know if people are going to be willing to go to the theaters to see that. Now, on the positive side, though, while usually with Michael Bay films overall, but specifically with Transformers films, those films almost got up to almost 3 hours a piece, basically, over the last couple of films, and this Transformers film is actually going to be coming well below the 2-hour mark, around 1 hour and 47 minutes. So I'm very curious to see how this film does, but I'm very finicky on this movie actually being a critical success, let alone a box office success again. I just don't know the interest in Transformers right now. On the other hand, though, when it comes to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I do think that there's a lot of interest and enthusiasm for this film, and I'm very curious to see what the box office results for this movie are going to look like. Now, people have it creeping towards potentially $100 million, and I think the factor for it being that people love Spider-Man, I think people loved Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I think people are wondering to see what this next chapter of Miles Morales' story is going to look like, and you're seeing all these different Spider people come together. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this film does overall, and I think when you look at both Transformers and when you look at Spider-Man, those are films that are coming out right in the beginning of June, before you have, I think, more established films like The Flash coming out, and even Indiana Jones, I feel like, is a little bit of a wild card as well, but I have more confidence in the Indiana Jones than I even do Transformers, and Spider-Man to me is, even though the last film did $300 million, can this other film eclipse that because of the fan base that it's gotten through streaming on Netflix and people enjoying the soundtrack for that film and catching on to it all these years later since the first film came out in 2018 with Transformers? It's been a couple years even since Bumblebee, really, in 2018 as well, and the last main Transformers film was a year earlier in 2017. So is there still an enthusiasm to watch these films? I'm very curious to see how it's going to go and to see what the ticket response is going to be like in the weeks leading up to these films coming out in the beginning of June. So which film would you rather see in theaters right now? Would it be Transformers Rise of the Beast? Would it be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the final thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is for a little film that is set to come out on Memorial Day weekend. And that, of course, is the latest in the live action retellings of animated classics from the Disney vault in The Little Mermaid. And this, of course, is based off of the classic 1989 animated film from that studio, which really, when you look at the Disney renaissance of films like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Tarzan, the list can go on and on, Mulan, all these films, really you could look at The Little Mermaid as kind of being the launching pad for that kind of wave that we got in the 90s with those kind of iconic classic Disney characters. And The Little Mermaid is no exception to that. And I know that there was a lot of controversy between the casting and Halle Bailey, which was idiotic. And of course, you know, is this film going to look good? The trailers haven't looked good. So I think people are wondering what the reactions of this film are going to look like. You know, how does Halle Bailey do as Ariel? How does the rest of the cast look? How does the CGI look underwater with all these creatures? And it seems like overall there is a really positive response to this movie. And this is just reading some of the early reactions coming out for the film. And the first one we're going to start off with, of course, is going over to someone that we all know and love, who's been on the podcast before, the managing director over at Fandango, the one and only Eric Davis. And this is what he had to say about The Little Mermaid overall when he got to see it a few days ago. So he said, "Disney's The Little Mermaid is definitely one of the better live-action adaptations. Halle Bailey pours incredible emotion into Ariel, and I got chills watching her, while Melissa McCarthy's Ursula and David Diggs' Sebastian steal scenes all day. The classic plays like the classics, and the new songs are fun, especially Awkwafina's song, which is where you really sense that Lin-Manuel Miranda influence. The colorful underwater sequences were my favorite. If you love the music and director and characters, you'll have a good time." Then moving on over to some other reactions coming out from the film, moving over to Courtney Howard, who saw the film a couple of nights ago as well. And this is what she had to say about the film. "The Little Mermaid, charming but incredibly spotty. Halle Bailey, John Howard King, Melissa McCarthy, and Javier Bardem put their heart and souls into a film that can't escape its animated legacy. Best when it leans into campy bonkers, yet limits its fantasy elements for no reason." Then moving on down the list, we have from Big Screen Leaks, "The Little Mermaid is fantastic. Rob Marshall's great direction gives us one of the Disney's best live action remakes and a joyful theatrical experience. Halle Bailey is perfect as Ariel and is the heart of the movie. It's an enchanting journey under the sea. I can't wait to re-watch. And then moving on over to another person over at Collider, the one and only Perry Nemiroff, who saw the film. This is what she had to say about The Little Mermaid. Little Mermaid is, and it is amazing. Halle Bailey is the Little Mermaid, an angelic voice, the longing in her eyes, the chemistry with young Howard King. She's flawless. The movie overall isn't, but there's more than enough charm, heart, and adventure there to power it forward. Melissa McCarthy is deliciously devilish Ursula, some of my favorite effects works to come in the third act, and focus on her. David Diggs is stellar as Sebastian, a favorite of the film by far. So those are just some of the early reactions coming from the film. Now again, the review embargo isn't lifted until I believe it's May 22nd, so a couple of days before the film officially releases, but it seems like overall the response is positive to a little bit mixed, I think, for people that maybe aren't on board maybe with some of these Disney live action remakes, or have kind of seen this song and dance before where it's able to deliver on the magic but doesn't do anything to expand upon it. And to me, what I always think is important with these live action remakings is you're able to expand upon some of these characters, even though if it's just a little bit here and there, which is why for me something like Aladdin works really well, is because you get the same magic from those elements that you know, but they're able to expand and do certain things differently with characters that I think work for a live action storytelling in more modern times. Whereas something like Lion King, even though it's visually, it's amazing, it's a true paint by numbers remake of the animated classic. And so I think you need to add a little bit more flavor. And the fact that this film is over 2 hours long, I believe it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, I think showcases that Rob Marshall, who's usually kind of hit and miss, you don't know really what to get, but his track record, when he hits really, really well. And I think it seems like he's able to do that with this film. Some of the creatures didn't really do it for me when it comes to seeing them in the trailer. I haven't seen the movie just yet, but it sounds like at least some of them really did hit. It sounds like David Diggs as Sebastian really hit the mark. Awkwafina sounds like she really hit the mark with some people that enjoyed the film. And I think the overall takeaway and the big question mark moving forward was seeing what Halle Bailey was able to do as Ariel. And it has nothing to do with race or anything like that. I think people that might be questioning it is questioning what can she do as an actor. And I think for me, that was one of the questions I had. And that's going to be one of the things going forward when I see her in this film. But it seems like overall, she brings that magnetic charm. And we all know that she can definitely sing. I mean, she has the pipes for it. You just see in the trailers and the clips that we see for this movie, she can sing. And I think it's more about how she's going to be able to deliver on the acting side of these things, and it seems like she does just that. So I'm excited to see her in this film, and I'm excited to see where her career goes from here. But to see Melissa McCarthy in this is exciting. Javier Bardem, I'm really looking forward to seeing this movie. And I'm somebody who can be kind of hit and miss with these live action animated films. I like some of them, don't like some of them, so it's a 50-50 shot for me when it comes to experiencing these movies, because I'm a fan of the animated films. I think they're all classics, and I think there's magic to be found in making these films. I don't think, sure, they're a big cash cow, but I think you can find new elements to take away from these films and deliver a lot of the same beats that you got from these films, but deliver on something new that a younger generation can experience. And if they want to watch The Little Mermaid, they can watch the animated film, but they can have their own enjoyable experience in watching these live action films as well. And I think that's in the end what they're really there for. They're there for the families, the younger generations, to see these on the big screen in a live action sense than in an animation format. So I think if the ball keeps rolling, they'll keep doing it. Then it seems like, I think, based off these reactions, it's going to be a big help for people that maybe were a little bit on the fence, that they'll go and support this film. And I think it's going to be a major, major win at the box office. And I might be crazy saying this, but I do think this could be one of the films that hits $1 billion at the box office. I think it's going to be few, far in between films that actually do hit $1 billion. But I do think if there's one that has a really good shot of doing it, if it's able to do really well in subsequent weeks after opening weekend and keep that positive word of mouth going, it's The Little Mermaid. So I think this film is going to do really, really well, and I think these positive reactions are only going to help make that the case even more so and get more people to see these films in theaters. So what did you guys think about the reactions to The Little Mermaid so far? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts with that down and out of the way. That will do it for this edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to see what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Attic Radio, WrestleMania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at RealAmbiguous. And if you want to check out Canterbury Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on Twitter at Bissell Samuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time, keep on screening.